That took forever. You latecomers are lucky my laptop takes like 10 minutes to start off. please start on the Chapter 7 Mastering Chemistry assignment right away if you haven't already. While it's still somewhat fresh in your mind from what we talked about on Monday, you have until Wednesday to do it, but you should be able to get that finished up this week. So, remember what I said last time, that it refers to a slightly different version of that equation that we use to find change in energy in an electronic transition. You can go ahead and just use the equation that we used here in class. I think it's a little simpler. If you want to figure out their equation, it's the it has the same second part where it's 1 over n squared final minus 1 over n squared initial, but the constants are different. So there's a couple of constants where our book just combined it all into that one single value that you can use to get delta E. So, that should be good then.
Do you know what our next question is
going to be? Oh, that's a good question. Let's look at our calendar here. Today's the 18th. Next week.
The answers to all the questions are
good. Yeah. Next week's Thanksgiving, right? Mm-hmm. Our exam is...
Day after Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Friday after Thanksgiving, you have to come in special.
Or Monday after, start over.
7th, yep, that Monday. So... Yep, so we got an exam on December 7th. How about, no, I better have one. Before, let's not do it, well, yep, let's do a week from today. I'll make an announcement page for that in the notes, but let's do quiz 3 a week from today on November 25th.
Yep. Thanksgiving?
Day before Thanksgiving. Then you'll get it over with before the break. All right. That's about right. If it was on the 30th, then it's only 1 week before the exam, so I have to grade it for you before the exam and you get 1 day to work it. Let's do that a week from today. I don't have any working pens in my pocket. They're all computer stylus.
Yeah. Here's pens.
If you let me know about it ahead of time. Next Wednesday. Yeah. Yeah. All right, other questions? So, where we ended last time was the start of Chapter 8, but really, like I said, it's just a direct continuation of Chapter 7. It's just, we had to probably divide them up at some point. We drew an orbital diagram of a hydrogen atom. Okay? I drew the box is the orbital, the place where the electrons can go. Okay. The single electron that hydrogen had, I drew as an up arrow. By convention, the first electron that we'll draw is up. Okay. So really that up direction doesn't mean anything. It's not literally pointed upwards or something. It's just there's an up spin and a down spin. It's just two opposite properties that electrons can have. But by convention, we draw the first one going up. So that last quantum number... Remember, there are four quantum numbers now. The last one defines one individual electron. So it's plus a half if it's an up electron. It's minus a half if it's a down electron. So with hydrogen, it's pretty easy. You got one electron. It just goes into the lowest energy orbital there is. We call that 1s last time. It's just one electron. So let's deal with multiple electron atoms. We already decided the first three quantum numbers define an orbital, right? Remember, n is the size of the orbital and the energy, right? But size mostly. L is the shape of an orbital. Remember, there are s orbitals that are spherical, that are p, there are p that have two lobes, d that are clover, f that are more complicated. M sub L is the orientation of an orbital. So for instance, there are always p orbitals always come in groups of three. There's one that's up down, one that's left right, one that's forward backward. So the 2p subshell has p orbitals in those three different arrangements. So M sub L tells us which of those orbitals we happen to be talking about in that group of orbitals. Then finally, the last one, M sub S, tells us the spin of an electron in that orbital that we've defined. So the first three define an orbital. The last one defines which electron we're talking about in that orbital. So since there are only two values for M sub S, there's an upspin and a downspin, right? Negative a half and plus a half. How many electrons can fit in an orbital? Two, right? That's a statement of Pauli exclusion principle. No two electrons in the atom can have the same four quantum numbers. So each electron in an atom must be able to be defined uniquely as opposed to the other ones. So if I had any more than two electrons in an orbital, I would have to be doubling up on a set of quantum numbers somewhere. So if one orbital can only have plus a half or minus a half for its electrons, that means what you guys just told me. Each orbital can hold no more than two electrons. So that means those p orbitals I was talking about a second ago, the one up, down, the left, right, the forward, back, the up, down one can hold two, the left, right one can hold two, the front, back one can hold two. So in that whole grouping of p orbitals, we can hold six electrons. So we'll see that we'll get those numbers straightened out here in a moment. But each orbital can only hold a pair, right? One up and one down. Does that make sense? So let's look at helium, right? Our first multiple electron atom, right? It was two electrons. The electron configuration of its ground state, remember, what does ground state mean? The lowest possible energy state. So all electrons will be as low energy as they can possibly be. Okay? But that doesn't mean in a large atom that they're all in 1s, because we said an orbital can only hold two electrons. So for helium, right, we take that lowest orbital, we call it 1s. Okay? How will I indicate helium's electrons in that 1s orbital?
Up arrow and
down arrow. Yep, I'll draw an up arrow and down arrow. Just like that. We're not particular about how you draw the arrows. I just make them single barb like that because they fit next to each other. Nice. That's what a lot of people do. So its electron configuration is 1s, and then 1s says which type of orbital we're dealing with. Superscripted after that, what should I put? 1s superscript 2. What's that 2 mean? Yeah, there are two electrons. That's how many electrons there are. Let's write out the quantum numbers for both of those electrons. Here, I'm going to move this up a little bit. Don't you guys wish you could move all your words around in your finger? Makes it easy. We have that up electron. We have this down electron. Let's write the four quantum numbers for each of those. So there's N, there's L, there's M sub L, and M sub S. Both of those electrons are in the same orbital. So what does that mean about some of these quantum numbers? Some of these quantum numbers will be the same. Which ones will be the same? The first three, right? The first three quantum numbers define an orbital. The last defines which electron we're talking about. So for both of those, what is n? What is the n quantum number? One. The principal quantum number is this first big number that's always listed here in at the beginning of an orbital name like that, or a subshell name. Okay? So n equals 1. Okay. The constraints for L are that L can be any number between 0 and n minus 1. So what is L here? L has to be 0. There are no other options for L. When L is 0, what does that mean about the orbital? It's spherical, yeah. L equals 0 means S. So it goes 0, 1, 2, 3, S, P, D, F. Okay? So L is 0, that means it's an S. That means it's a spherical orbital. Hey, easy way to remember it. The number 0 looks like the actual orbital. What about that? All right. M sub L tells us which orbital of a group we're talking about. And it can go from negative L to positive L. But if it's just 0, then what does M sub L have to be? 0. It's the only option. Let's keep on rolling there. All right. For the up spin electron, M sub S is what? Plus 1/2. The down spin is negative 1/2.
Is it plus then, or is it positive?
Same thing. Same thing. Positive 1/2. Okay? So we have followed the Pauli exclusion principle here in that I have two different electrons that have two different sets of quantum numbers. They're all the same up until the third one, because the first three define any one orbital. And when we're drawing an orbital diagram, an orbital is a box. It's a place where electrons can go. In the actual atom, an orbital is a region inside of which those electrons are. So because we said this was S, this is actually a spherical region where two electrons can be occupying inside of that. Okay? We good so far? All right. Let's keep going. Let's do beryllium, which has 4 electrons. So the first two electrons will look just like helium's electrons, right? We'll start with the lowest energy ones. So we'll start out with 1s2. Okay. Then we're going to move on. There is no such thing as 1p, because if we think about our quantum numbers, for there to be 1p, L would have to be 1, and L can't go any higher than 0. So in n equals 1, there's only one type of orbital. It's 1s, and that's it. Okay? So what's going to come next, then? 2s. And how many electrons will be in 2s? 2. It'll also be full. So the orbital diagram we'll draw will have a box for 1s and a box for 2s. 2 electrons in 1s, 2 electrons in 2s. All right. What would be the only difference in the quantum numbers of these 2s electrons compared to the 1s electrons? Which quantum number will be different? N? N will be equal for these ones. N will be equal to what? 2? What will L be equal to for those ones? L will still be equal to 0. Okay? We now have the option of having an additional L, but we haven't gotten there yet. Okay? We have 2 electrons. Those 2 electrons will fill up this first one before we start filling up ones that are higher in energy. Okay? So don't just think that because L can go up to 1, if n equals 2, that that's what it is. We still start with the lowest energy one. L always starts at 0. Okay?
Is that because there's 3, or since it's 3 electrons, is that what would n be on that? 4 electrons
For these ones, n equals 1. For these ones, n equals 2.
And that's because it can be in different...
No, each electron is in its own place. Okay. The first two electrons will have these configurations. The last two electrons will have the same except n equals 2. So think of those four things as coordinates that describe individual electrons. So these first electrons are in n equals 1. These ones are in n equals 2. Okay? So the first two electrons are in an s orbital that's small. The next two electrons can occupy any space inside of a larger s orbital. See? So they can overlap a bit, but they have a larger area inside of which they can occupy. Okay? All right. So it's important for us when we have multiple electrons and multiple orbitals to fill, it's important for us to understand what the energy of these orbitals is, because that determines where electrons go. In a ground state, they always want to be as low energy as possible. Remember back to hydrogen, it was easy because N was the only thing that defined the energy. Okay? And it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And that's why we could do calculations in last chapter for any transition, because we only had one quantum number to worry about. Okay? Multi-electron atoms, both N and L, influence the energy of an orbital. So in N equals 2, for instance, there's 2s and 2p. Those will be different in energy. So s are lower in energy than p, than d, than f. So if we need to be filling in the n equals 2 level, we would want to fill in 2s before we fill in 2p. So take a look at this diagram here. This goes up in energy. 1s, like we just had, is the lowest in energy. 2s is higher in energy, but then 2p comes after that. Now, let's use this sort of as a guide here and do boron, which has 5 electrons. Each of these little lines here corresponds to what? There's one of them in 2s, but there's 3 of them in 2p. What are each of those called? Yeah, each of those are orbitals. And orbitals can hold how many electrons? 2. Okay? So these are the same as those boxes that I drew on the last page. Okay? Sometimes they're boxes, sometimes they're just a blank where you can draw arrows if you want. So yeah, why are there 3 orbitals that are 2p? Yeah. Remember, starting at p, there are multiple orbitals in a group. Okay? One's vertical, one's horizontal, one's front and back. Remember those? So the ML, the M sub L number, tells you which in that group we're talking about. So this was minus 1, 0, and plus 1. In D, we have minus 2, minus 1, 0, 1, and plus 1. N plus 2. Okay. So, each of these is an orbital. This grouping is called a subshell. So, there are 3 2p orbitals within the 2p subshell. The orbitals are the places where individual electrons can go, and each one can hold 2, but there are a grouping of 3 similar orbitals whenever there's p, just different directions. Okay? So, on your paper, if you haven't already, write what you think the configuration should be of boron, starting with the lowest energy orbital. So write what the subshell is and how many electrons are in it. If you want to draw some arrows in the little boxes here corresponding to where you think those electrons will go, that'll probably be helpful. So where'd you put the first two electrons?
1s.
1s2. That corresponds with those right there. Where'd the next ones go? 2s2. Those electrons. There were up to four. Where's the fifth one going to go? 2p. 2p1. Okay, just like that. By convention, I'll draw the first one going up and in the first box, in the first orbital, the first place that they can go. Okay? So an orbital diagram will look just like that, except written out. Now, what I'm going to do for 1s, that was a box because that's two electrons. 2s, that's a box because that's two electrons. How many boxes total will 2p have, though? Yeah, 2p will have three boxes. I'll put them together. Run together like that to show that there's a group of three orbitals, but they're equal in energy. So, like we said, two electrons in 1s, two electrons in 2s, one electron in 2p. Right?
Question.
Yeah?
Is that going to be to a higher level like 3D or 4D? Is it going to have a group of five boxes together?
Yep. 3D will be five boxes. If we ever had to draw an F subshell, that would be seven boxes next to each other. We don't have to draw those much, but we will have to draw sets of five boxes, though.
Before you get to the 5S, which would obviously be an element further down the table for you to get there, but
yep.
Wouldn't you have 4F before you would get to 5S?
Well, let's look at my last little statement here, and then it'll help a little bit. Since energies get closer together as n increases, for instance, a 4s orbital is lower in energy than a 3d orbital. So, take a look at what happens here. If we look at just the s's, they get closer together as energy increases. But because we actually have more of those subshells, right, more of those different places to go as we increase n, they start to overlap a bit. So you can sort of think of it like if you just had n, right, you'd have 1, then 2, then 3, then 4, then 5, like in hydrogen. But now with these subshells, you have 1, which is just 1, but 2 is split into 2 subshells, 3 is split into 3 subshells, 4 is split into 4 subshells, but in order for them to be getting closer together, they have to be overlapping a bit in their energies, right? So, by necessity, I mean, just in terms of how those energies end up working out, 4s is lower in energy than 3d. Even though 3d is in the third principal energy level, because s's are much more stable or lower in energy than d's in general, turns out that that 4s is slightly lower in energy than 3d. And that overlapping will continue. Right, it'll get more and more overlapped as we go on. So they don't even have F on here, but SP4S4P4D4F would be overlapped significantly with the other ones, right? Even with 5 and even with 6.
So
turns out.
A way to know that without having that table.
Absolutely, there's an excellent way of knowing that. I'll keep you in suspense for a few minutes, though. Yeah, there's a wonderful, elegant way of knowing that, but we'll get to those overlaps in just a minute. Let's keep it simple, though. Okay. We already did a couple of these, so we can fill in some of these pretty quickly. Here's 1s, 2s, and 2p. We did hydrogen, that's 1s1, helium, 1s2, my grid on here, okay. Lithium, 1s2, then what?
2s.
2S1. Okay. Beryllium, we already did. 1S2, 2S2. Up, down, up, down. Boron, we already did. 1S2, 2S2, 2P1. Up, down, up, down, up. Now we're on carbon. 1S2, 2S2, 2P, 2P what?
2.
All right. But let's look at Hund's rule before I draw those arrows in. Electrons fill orbitals with equal energy singly first with parallel spins. Where are the orbitals with equal energy on here? Yeah, the 2p's. There's a group of three equal energy 2p orbitals. Okay. Electrons fill orbitals with equal energy, so that whole group of 2p orbitals, electrons will fill them singly first with parallel spins. So that means with carbon, 1s2, 2s2, 2p1, where's that second electron going to go?
Next to it.
Next to it? Right here?
No.
In box number 2, with what spin?
Up.
There you go. The reason for that is that electrons are all negative. They repel each other. So when given the choice, they would not want to be concentrated in one orbital. They want to be spreading out first. Only once they've already filled each orbital once will they go back and double up after that. So they want to be as spread out as possible. Just think of it that way. So all of these are going to start with 1s2, 2s2, right? These orbitals will be filled. All of them. Up, down, up, down, up, down. Why don't you see if you can fill in these remaining four with their electrons using Hund's rule? Complete the electron configurations. We're just going in order. These are just elements in order of atomic number, so each successive element has one more electron than the previous did. We just put them in order that way. Okay. How did you draw the 2p electrons in nitrogen?
One up arrow in each box.
One up arrow in each box. Okay. Oxygen, we're at least going to have those. Then where will the fourth 2p electron go? First box? Looking what? Down? There you go. 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay? In that way, the electrons are spread as far apart as each other in those groups of orbitals. So if I had a D subshell with 5 boxes in it, I'd put one individually in each of the 5 boxes before I then put the second one in each box. That's Hund's rule. Okay? That make sense, everybody? You good? Let's see here. We won't. Yeah, I got more written on here. We can come back to that. But what we will define right here are inner electrons. Inner electrons are a full noble gas electron configuration inside of an atom. So, yeah, we can write that here. We can represent the inner electrons with just the noble gas in brackets. So if we go back up to hydrogen, okay, we don't have any noble gases filled. Right? Helium is the first noble gas. It's in It's number two, but it's way over on the right-hand side. Remember where the noble gases are in the periodic table? Very right-hand column. So helium is there. If I want to write an abbreviated electron configuration, hydrogen doesn't have one because we haven't filled a noble gas yet. Helium, 1s2, but we can write it like that. Anytime we have a full noble gas worth of electrons, we can write its symbol in brackets. So helium in brackets represents 1s2. Okay? So how would I be able to abbreviate lithium's electron configuration?
Helium in brackets 2s1.
Yeah, helium, then 2s1. You see that? We'll learn there's something special about those noble gases. I mean, that's a particularly stable set of electrons. So when we have a full core of noble gas electrons, those are stable, and those actually don't participate in reactions or electron transfers or anything like that. So once we get a noble gas worth of electrons, those are established on the inner part of the molecule, and they don't make an effect on the changes we'll be interested in. So electrons outside of that noble gas core of electrons, those are the interesting ones to us. Those end up being the ones that get transferred or make bonds with or something like that. Okay? So helium 2s2. For boron, how will I have to abbreviate that? Can I, since beryllium had 1s and 2s filled, can I put beryllium in brackets? Beryllium is not a noble gas. We've filled its 1s, or we filled its 2s, but the next noble gas is neon. Okay? So we have to keep going with helium, right, and so on, all the way down here. 2s2, 2p5. You can continue doing that. The last one, 2s2, 2p6, but that can also be written as what? Yeah, that can be written as just neon in brackets. Okay? So, what's going to be important for us in just a moment here is understanding which principal quantum number, which n, corresponds to these parts of the electron configurations. Okay? So n equals 1 is just this first column here. Right? 1s is the only thing that exists in n equals 1. N equals 2, there are 2s and 2p electrons. Okay? So in n equals 3, there's 3s, 3p, and 3d. They may not necessarily be in order, as we'll see later, but it will be important for us to group some of these orbitals by their principal quantum number. N equals 1. Let's see these ones were. N equals 2. All right? So the abbreviated electron configuration has inner electrons represented as a noble gas in brackets, then any electrons beyond that are written as is. Does that make sense? That's going to be very helpful for us at the end of the periodic table, where instead of writing out 100 electrons worth, we just get to start at one noble gas and go off of that. Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. I mean, if those outer electrons, if the ones past the nearest noble gas are the ones that are important to us, there's no reason for us to be worrying about all of the electrons up until that noble gas. So, well, this relates very closely to valence electrons. We had a brief discussion about those before when we were determining charges of ions, right? But valence electrons are the number of electrons in the outermost principal energy level, Okay. We'll deal with d electrons later when we've got transition elements. So we'll come back to this definition. But just for now, number of electrons in the outermost or the largest n, the largest principal energy level. So that's why I had us looking at n equals 1 and n equals 2. Okay. How many valence electrons does helium have? None? No. One? Helium? What is the largest principal energy level in helium? Largest occupied n. One. And that has how many electrons? Two. Okay. Once we're at lithium, now what is the largest principal energy level? What's the largest n?
Two.
And it contains how many electrons? How many electrons are in the largest? Yeah, there's just one. So, what I'm going to indicate here, for these ones, n equals 1 is what's called the valence shell. For us, the valence shell is going to be the place where important electrons are. Okay? The place where the electrons that we're most interested in reside. Okay? As soon as we start putting electrons in n equals 2, then n equals 2 becomes the valence shell. For all of these, okay. So, how many valence electrons does oxygen have? Six. Yeah. Because oxygen was, I'll write it in. 1s2, 2s2, 2p4. The valence electrons are these. There are six valence. How many valence electrons does neon have? Eight. Okay. N equals 2 is occupied, fully occupied, with all eight electrons in neon. Okay. Turns out when a shell, like when S and P subshells like that are filled, that's what makes things particularly stable. So if we look at this subset of the periodic table, we don't have the whole middle section in here. This is just the sides and the first three rows. Okay. This has just the valence electrons shown, or outer electrons. Okay? So that's where we said oxygen has six valence electrons. How many valence electrons does sulfur have? See sulfur under oxygen there? Six. How many valence electrons will any element in that column have?
Six.
Okay? That's one reason why the periodic table is arranged the way that it is. Okay? All elements within one column on a periodic table have the same number of valence electrons.
Is that why it's 6, 8?
Absolutely. Those numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, sometimes they're Roman numerals on a periodic table, but the ones that are before A, that actually shows you the number of valence electrons. Right there. So, on any periodic table, if you look at the group number that has the A behind it, okay, that's an easy way of finding how many valence electrons there are in any element. Okay? And that's important because we talked a little bit about, not a whole lot, but when we were introducing the periodic table, we talked about how elements within one column, we called it a group, okay, they all have similar chemical properties. They undergo the same kinds of reactions. Okay? So fluorine and chlorine and those under it, bromine and iodine, they all do the same types of reactions. Why do you suppose that is?
Same,
they have the same number of valence electrons. I call valence electrons the important electrons. Those are the ones that determine what reactions can happen, what ions can form. And if within a group we have the same number of valence electrons, we'll have the same kind of reactivity.
So, suppose all the valence electrons will have a magic number of 8, correct?
There's something special about 8 valence electrons. Helium's kind of an exception because it's 2, but all down here in the noble gases, there are 8 valence electrons. Yep. There's the number 8 valence electrons is a it corresponds with S and P subshells being filled, right? Because 2 will go in S and then 6 will go in P. When the S and P subshells of a certain energy level are filled, that makes that atom especially stable. So, what do we call atoms that have all of their S's and P's filled? Yeah, those are noble gases. Noble gases are unreactive precisely because they have that especially stable arrangement of electrons. Yep. The alternate name for them is inert gases, and inert means unreactive.
Okay. I suppose the valence electrons will determine if the element either drops or drops or either gains electrons.
Absolutely, yeah. We decided earlier on that to make an ion, we'll go whichever direction gets us to noble gas number of electrons. Okay? If the noble gas has extra stability, that's why fluorine will gain one electron, because then it will have neon's electron configuration. Its electrons will look like neons. Lithium has this one additional electron beyond helium. So if it loses this electron, it'll have electrons that look like heliums. And so on. So, the arrangement of the periodic table, it originally came from physical properties. If Mendeleev found that when you put these in order of rows and columns, their physical properties and chemical properties line up. The reason for that, okay, as we found once we've learned more about behavior of electrons and quantum dynamics and stuff, the reason for that is because the number of valence electrons lines up going down those columns. Okay. So, there's a slight difference here in definitions that we'll get to a little bit later. Core electrons are inner electrons plus any filled B or F sublevels, subshells. So that'll make more sense in a little bit when we do some transition elements. So the inner electrons, remember we said, are just the electrons corresponding with the noble gas, and there are electrons beyond it. So we'll come back to that. All right, here we go. Vanessa asked me if there's a way to know what energies will be higher than others and what order you'll be able to fill electrons in electron configurations, and it all comes from the periodic table. We always will have a periodic table in front of us, right? Whenever we need it on an exam or anything. Looking at a periodic table, we'll be able to tell what electrons have gone where to get to a certain element. And it turns out the reason the periodic table has the shape it is, it's because of the orbitals that are occupied by those elements. The periodic table was arranged in a way that made sense in terms of columns, okay? So it was originally arranged just based on properties, but we now know those properties come from the behavior of electrons. So electrons have these behaviors, right? That gives these elements their certain properties, and the periodic table was designed in order of those properties. So the periodic table has that very close relationship to the behavior of electrons themselves. So what we call blocks. So, four distinct regions of the periodic table. This is just sort of a cartoon of the different areas of a periodic table. So, over here, we'll call that the S block. When I have an element that exists in these first two columns over here, we have our last electrons going into s orbitals. Okay. Over here is the p block. Okay. Our example that we had before, right? We had boron, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine, and neon. And our last electrons were going into 2p. Right? Boron had 2p1, carbon had 2p2, nitrogen 2p3, and so on. Okay? So once we get to the transition element section of the periodic table, that's when d orbitals start to be filled. Okay? So we're in d subshells there. Once we're in the inner transition elements that are down below the periodic table, that's when f subshells are being filled. So we'll come back to this in a second. We'll write some rules for us to decide what principal energy levels go with these. But if we look at an actual periodic table, we can relate it to the work that we just did on do that. No, that won't quite fit. Can do that. Okay. So this is the same periodic table I've given you several times. You can go to the web page and print out as many of these as you like. As you're practicing electron configurations, I would recommend using a periodic table, using this periodic table or one like it. Okay? And specifically because of the behavior for what happens in there. Different periodic tables. If you get your book open, you'll notice there's a little different behavior, right? Some books have lanthanum and actinium right there. We designed this periodic table to make it the most straightforward to do electron configurations for as many elements as possible. Okay, so so this one makes electron configurations pretty easy. So let's go back to what we originally started with. Remember what hydrogen's electron configuration was? 1s1. Remember helium? 1s2. Okay. So helium's a bit of an exception. It only has two valence electrons where those others had eight. It's over in that area we called the P area, but helium's just a little different. We're just filling that first orbital with one electron or two electrons, and that's it. Okay. With lithium and beryllium, beyond 1s, okay, we're filling into which subshell? 2s. That's right. And after 2s was filled, we did boron, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine, and neon. What orbital was that that we were filling into? We're filling in 2p. Right? So all throughout this, we're filling in 2p. So beryllium is 1s2, 2s2. We can just count how many elements there are in that block. I could see very clearly here that fluorine would be 1s2, 2s2, 2p, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay? Because each successive element has one additional electron, you can take the element you're interested in and just count the elements on their way up to it. Okay? Within the p block over there, we just count how many electrons go into p. That's also an easy way for us to remember how many electrons can go in any subshell. How many electrons will fit in any p subshell? 6. And what's an easy way to remember that based on the periodic table? The p block is 6 elements across, right? And just to define our blocks here, it just goes straight down like that, where this was the p block, this was the s one, okay? And the d block in there. All right, so 2p has filled with neon, so neon, 1s2, 2s2, 2p6. Sodium will be that whole thing plus what? What subshell am I going into for sodium and magnesium now? 3s. Right? You see the pattern here? 1s, 2s, 3s. potassium and calcium are filling into 4S, 5S, 6S, 7S. See how that works? Sodium, 3S1. Magnesium is 3S2. Aluminum will be what? Yeah, it'll end with 3P, what, for aluminum? 3P1. All of these represent filling the 3P subshell. And argon will be up to what, 3P? 3P8? Nope. 3P6. 3S2, 3P6. It has 8 valence electrons because valence electrons count which subshells? Yeah, well, they count the S and the P subshells. Okay? Mm-hmm. Yep, the ones in the A section. Okay? So, we decided calcium is 4S. Okay. Now, when I go beyond calcium, which was 4S2, let's actually go to our next page because we can write those out. Once you write for me the electron configuration of calcium, use your periodic table. Okay? All you do is follow along those sections. Right? If you go element by element, you follow along and it tells you how many electrons go into those sections. Write the full one for calcium. We'll do abbreviated in just a second for these. But it's going to be useful for us to write the full one. So just for now, start with 1s2. You can get it written up for calcium. We'll write the full one, then we'll write the abbreviated one, too, just so we're clear. It might be handy for you, starting maybe next time, to just bring a separate periodic table. So if you get your textbook open, that'll work, or if you want to print one out from the webpage, it might just be handy to have one in your folder or whatever that you can always look at, since there's not a periodic table in this room. Okay? So tell me. Let's do this all in unison. I assume all of you have something written down on your paper. I want everybody to say out loud, okay, 1s2, then what? Everybody. 2s2, okay, then what?
3p6.
Then what?
3p2.
Then what?
3p6.
3p6, then what?
4s2.
Okay. Now, to write an abbreviated electron configuration, here's calcium. What am I going to start with? Yeah, I go backwards. Right? The largest noble gas inside of calcium is argon. Right? Argon's electron configuration all the way through 3P6 goes up through here. So, abbreviated, it's argon, then what? 4S2. Okay? Now, scandium is just one element beyond that, so it's going to be all the same to begin with. 2s2, 2p6, 3s2, 3p6, 4s2. Okay? But let's go back and look over here. Here's 4s. Okay. We did 3s2, 3p6, 4s2. What's going to come next after 4s that's higher in energy?
3D.
That overlap that we talked about now should make a little bit of sense because on the periodic table, after you finish going through 4s, right, we go into a D section. Okay. Now, you have to be careful because 4s is here. It's not 4D. Okay. It's what? 3D? All of these are 3D. The reason for that is because even though we're in the fourth row here, we still have d's from n equals 3 in order to deal with. Okay? They weren't up here, because then 3d would be higher in energy than 3p, and that's not the case. The only way for this to work out, where 4s is after 3p, then 3d is after it. Okay? That's why the transition elements start there and not earlier. Okay? Remember, the periodic table came from properties, and those properties came from electron behavior. So because 3d is higher in energy than 4s, that's why these elements come here on the periodic table. Okay? So scandium will have all that 4s2 and what after it? What after 4s2? 3d1. So abbreviated, argon 4s2 3d1. So let's look back at our periodic table. 4s, then 3d. What comes after 3d then? 4p. Okay. 5s, then what? 4d, then 5p. We can number all these p's going down, 6p, 7p. We can number these d's going down, 3d, 4d, 5, 6d. Okay. Can get to those in a second. If n equals 1 only had s, if n equals 2 had s and p, if n equals 3 had s, p, and d, what's going to be the first f?
4.
So down here in the inner transition elements, there's 4f and 5f. Now, 4f comes after what orbital? 4d? No. In the order of filling, in the filling order that the periodic table tells us, 4d, 4f comes after success. And, yeah, success, right? So that's why this periodic table is nice, though. 6s is right here. Then you can't help but skip. You can't help but remember to go down here, because it tells you to. You go 55, 56, 57, and just continue down there. Okay? So it goes 6s, then 4f, then back up to 5d. 7s, then 5f, then back to 6d. So let's take these principal quantum numbers. That's what these numbers are in each of these. Those are all n, right? And let's relate those principal quantum numbers to the period number. That's just the number of what row it's in. Okay? So for s's and p's, how does the n relate to the period number? The same. Let's write that in our cartoon up here, right? N equals the period number. N equals period number. So for any s or any p, all you do is look at the row number, and that tells you what it is. If I'm in the sixth row, that's 6s, that's 6p. Okay? Let's look at it for d. N equals period number minus 1. What row is 4f in? In here. Can you even write that in there? That little box there. So for f, n equals period number right here is the minimum amount of information that you need to write the electron configuration for any element on the periodic table. Okay? So you're asking me if there's an easy way to not memorize the order of things. Well, here it is. Okay? If you're traveling through this region, you're adding into S subshells. If you're traveling through there, you're adding into P. Through here, you're adding into D, but the N is 1 subtracted from the row number. So that's why we were in row 4. We had 4S, then we had 3D. In row 6 here, we had 6S, then 4F, then 5D, then 6P. Okay? So that's really the minimum amount of information. People like to write these orbital names on periodic tables like this. You know, you'll get a periodic table with your exam or quiz. I see some students that just like to write those in. If you know you start with 1 there, you start with 3 there, and you start with 4 there, you've got them in that way. Okay? Otherwise, if you just want to look at the periodic table, right? S's, that's 5S. D's, that's 4D because it's 1 subtracted. This is 4F because it's 2 subtracted from that row. Okay? So just sort of the minimum amount of information. And that simply comes from, well, it comes from 2 things. It comes from the fact that the principal energy levels overlapped each other with their subshells, okay? And that the first available D was 3D, okay? Not 4D. So the first occurrence where we saw D's was 3. The first occurrence we saw F's is 4. Now, if we had a larger periodic table, if we knew of more elements, it would get more and more complicated because there would have to be G subshells continuing on from there. So there would probably be another block, right, in between these ones right here, 3 or 4 rows down, where you'd be filling in G subshells. So maybe in some other galaxy where there's more elements that happen to form when the galaxy cooled from the Big Bang, there's more elements. That's what their periodic table would look like. But the start of it would at least look like this still. So.
Did you say in the earlier chapter that there are higher subshells than F?
Mm-hmm.
So if they're excited, they would create more
subshells? Yeah. Well, for instance, if I have an electron in the very highest energy subshell that we have here, 7P, it could be excited into an 8S. It could be excited into a 6F, right, to a 7D or an 8P. Okay? It would have to go all the way through a couple more iterations, though, until we got to the first occurrence of G, right? Because 4F, 5G wouldn't happen until a couple of rows later on.
Have you ever got the electron death?
I don't know, probably, but it's, I mean, the problem is, once you get to such high energies, they get closer and closer and closer together, so it's harder and harder to tell what exactly they're coming from. So, but yeah, I'm sure there are exciteds. There are definitely excited states with orbitals beyond those written here. There probably is some sort of excited state with a G subshell, at least theoretically, I'm sure. All right. So with that, you should be able to write pretty much any electron configuration, and I urge you to practice that, especially going through the F block, being able to practice going S, then F, then D. You know, if you just want to get it practiced and get it out of the way, take the very last element on the periodic table and write it starting from the beginning. Right? It'll take you a third of a page, but if you can do that, you can write any electron configuration anywhere on the way to it. When we get beyond about halfway down the periodic table, we almost exclusively use the abbreviated one. So makes it a little easier. So sometimes electron configurations are rearranged into order of increasing n. Okay? It's easy, when we're using the periodic table, it's easiest for us to write electron configuration based on order of filling, okay, which follows along in the periodic table. But let's do selenium. Let's do selenium, which is where? It's over here. Okay.
34.
What's that?
34.
34? Yep. So I can just quickly write it out fully. We'll write it abbreviated too. But 1s2, 2s2, 2p6. Okay. That got us to neon. 3s2, 3p6. So next, that's argon. 4s2, 3d10, 4p4. Okay, that's periodic table order. Sometimes called the filling order. Okay. I mentioned here, sometimes we rearrange those subshells. We're not changing the configuration, we're just changing the order we write it, because it's going to make it easier for us to find valence electrons. So in order of increasing n, so I'm going to put all the n equals 3s together, right, all the n equals 2s together. I'm going to put within each n them in order of increasing subshell. So I always S, then P, then D, then F. So we don't have to do anything for 1s. We don't have to do anything for the 2s, because we just have S and P. Okay? So 1s2, 2s2, 2p6, 3s2, 3p6. But if I want to group the 3s together, what should I put next? 3d10. Then 4s2, 4p4. Okay? The reason for doing that is because then I can very easily find valence electrons. Okay? Look on your periodic table for selenium. Okay? How many valence electrons should this have based on its position in the periodic table? Yeah, just like oxygen and sulfur should have 6. There's the Roman numeral there. Okay? Which N is the valence shell? Which N is the largest occupied N in this electron configuration? N equals what? Remember, N is the first number of each of these. 3 is the largest N? No. 4 is the largest N. Okay. So valence electrons will occur in here. On the periodic table order, the valence electrons are split by the 3d. Okay. So and a common mistake, if you're looking at an electron configuration in periodic table order, a lot of students would just pick this one. Okay? Or maybe someone picked that one, but that's not right. You look at the largest n, okay? But this one is part of n equals 4 as well. Okay? We look at the largest principal energy level. Okay? If we have them in order of increasing n's, then they'll always just be right together. Okay? So you find the largest n, which is n equals 4 in this case, then they're grouped together for that way. So if I did that in this case, I'd just have 3p6. Here, let's write that. Rearranged. And we'll talk about how to deal with d's and valence electrons next time. But I think that's about it for today. Practice electron configurations. Do polonium and BH, wherever that is, find that on the periodic table. Do them in periodic table order, so filling order, and then in rearranged order for both of them. So that'll be some good practice for you.